Hi, it's Dave. Welcome. Today, I'm joined by Pierre Farragut. He is an analyst with New Street Research. And today, we're going to be talking about Tesla, the macro markets, what to expect in 2022. But also, we're going to zoom out to do a 2030 view of some Tesla expectations. I can't wait to talk with Pierre. Welcome on the show. How are you doing?
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for having me. And I'm doing fine. And I look forward to the chat with you.
Awesome. Great. Yeah. You've become an important, I think, analyst in the Tesla community, asking great questions always at the conference call, also tweeting out, being a great voice of clarity for Tesla's future. I'm curious, with the crazy kind of volatility in the markets lately, we've had Tesla go up and down, the markets go up and down. I'm curious, have clients been contacting you, kind of asking you for advice, like what's going on? Should we maybe pull back on our growth investments? And like, what do you say to them in these times of uncertainty?
Yeah. So, you know, I would say, Dave, the type of work we do with my team, our research tends to be fairly fundamental, looking at, you know, what's like the inherent right to make money of the companies we cover and of Tesla, you know, understanding the technology, understanding competitive advantages, moats and things like that. So we're not like the kind of like the type of analyst like being deep into the weeds of what's moving the stocks one day in, one day out. So the honest answer to your question is no, we don't have that many of these conversations with investors. The conversations we have are more about, you know, understanding how the fundamentals of the company are evolving. And I would say our like short-term investors might be looking at things on a one-year horizon and things like that. So shorter-term movements are less of a concern to us. So we had a lot of conversation, of course, into the end of December about how Q4 was shaping up and how like the outlook for 2022 was shaping up. We upgraded the stock, I think, in November. Or maybe in October after the reported Q3, where we really noted in the Q3 report and the comments of the company and conversations we could have with management that Tesla was like we said at the time escaping like reaching escape velocity, like with gross margins expanding, growth accelerating, etc. So we've been talking a lot about that, but the fact that the stock like went up to almost $1,300 and then pulled back below $1,000. Again, that didn't generate that much. I think it was very technical, not really fundamental. No specific concerns reflected in investors, sentiment, like the whole thing about Elon selling shares and things like that created a lot of volatility, but like institutional investors were not very, very, very active in this controversy, I think.
Got it. When you talk with investors and clients, what is kind of the one thing that you think most of the people might not understand or get about Tesla that you do? Like, what's the most underestimated, kind of a misunderstood aspect of Tesla?
It's a good question. I think it's a lot of them. The one that comes to my mind right now, I like to summarize it in a very simple sentence, which is Tesla is a $1 trillion startup with a 1% market share. Hmm. And that investors don't get it. Because if you scroll down, you know, that statement, what does that mean? So that means the addressable market of Tesla is the car industry. It's 100 million units. Tesla is producing on a run rate a bit more than a million units. So they have a 1% addressable market. They got there out of nowhere, in like a 100-year-old industry with a level of innovation on just how to make a car. I always like to compare the economics of Tesla selling a Model 3 and like a BMW or a Volkswagen selling like an equivalent EV. And you see that Tesla is basically making twice better margins selling for 10% less than the equivalent IC car. And traditional manufacturers basically price up by 20% their electrified version, and they at best make half the margin, the gross margin they make on a on a traditional IC car. So that gives you an idea of the monstrous gap that there is between Tesla's capabilities and the rest of the industry. And so I'm actually wondering, you know, Tesla has 1% market share today. I think the absolute bull case, that's even the bull case of Elon, is to be maybe at 20% market share, maybe 25% in 2030. And I'm actually wondering, you know, who is going to take the other 75% of the market? It's still very unclear. And so that's very simply the core automotive business of Tesla is exceptional. And investors want very quickly to talk about full self-driving, AI, insurance, and robotaxi, and energy storage. We're like, hey, let's talk about cars first, because that part of the business is still like vastly, vastly underestimated.
Mm-hmm. How important do you think this gross margin kind of story for Tesla is? It seems like a lot of analyst investors never expected Tesla to get to, you know, let's say around 30% gross margins. But how far can this go? Do you see it just continuously increasing in the future? And then where does this end up? 5 years down the road, do you have any, you know, ideas? Or is there a certain place where the gross margins you think will be capped?
It's a very good question. And I can tell you that the people who are the most surprised about this gross margin are actually people at Tesla. If you speak to management and to people who've been in like the financial planning, you know, kind of exercise at Tesla, the initial thought was, let's aim for this $35,000 car, because above that demand is not enough. We'll never get like large scale, and it's going to be tough. And so, but we're going to market that idea that we can do a $35,000 car. And basically Tesla today is in a position to really make very, very decent margin with a $35,000 car. But by the time they got there, they realized like demand was beyond the most optimistic way you could have thought about it. Demand is way, way, way stronger than they would have ever, ever imagined. And so they are clicking up prices and clicking up prices and clicking up prices. And demand is still like impossible to meet. Like you have like 6 months wait times on average. You, in some markets, you have like more than a year. They've had to stop like offering the car in some markets. It's insane. So that surprised everybody, including me and including Tesla's management. And in that situation, I would say you have a combination of relatively short to near term factors, which is like the inflationary kind of bubble in which we just entered, the fact that a lot of liquidity came into the market, you know, like so we talk a lot about the pandemic, but I think like things like, you know, asset inflation, the price of Bitcoin and things like that helped as well a lot. So there is a lot of money to be spent on that kind of new toys. And so you have to be careful, because that may not last forever. And then there is an extremely strong phenomenon that I've always called in my research, even like 5 years ago, we were writing about it, about Tesla, which is this idea that Tesla is a trading up brand. And the beauty of a trading up brand is that you're never too sure where it's going to end. And so if you look at historic trading up brands, the most interesting one historically has been Apple, who came into a market, a mobile phone market, with a $700 phone. At the time, the addressable market for $700 phone was like, you know, maybe 60 million units a year, something like that. And we were analysts, you know, talking about, wow, Apple could take like the 30% of that 60 million units. But that market became a 600 million unit market, because the $700 phone became such an amazing product that people started like saving on other things to spend that money on the phone. Okay, and so that's what's happening with Tesla today. The last time I was able to check that data, the trading data, it was showing that only 40% of people buying a Model 3 or a Model Y were actually coming from the premium market. We are trading in a premium car. And 60% are actually coming from the non-premium market. And that ratio might be, is probably expanding today, given how strong demand is. And so, you know, the market for cars above $35,000, 3-4 years ago, it was like, you know, maybe like an 8-9 million unit market. It might become a 25 million unit market. And in that case, Tesla's gross margin is going to be really going to be sustainable for a very long period of time, because you continue to have this very strong demand. You'll continue to have a very like vivid lack of competition, or competition with, you know, a cost base that is so uncompetitive that it's, it might take market share, but it's not going to take, you know, to create pricing pressure. And then Tesla is, I wonder, you know, if 5 years ago, Elon was anticipating how much he could get out of manufacturing, how much he could take the cost of batteries down. It's really, really delivering above any expectation. So the cost base is coming down. So of course, when Tesla is going to be doing a $25,000 car, you have to find $10,000 to take out of the car. So it's not going to be a 30% gross margin car, but it might be still a decent gross margin car. So I think in 2030, when you'll have in the mix a lot of, like a majority of $25,000 cars, purely the auto gross margin is probably going to be below where it is today, I think. But then by then, like the FSD insurance, like the all like the additional very high margin business that is very, very closely related to the auto business might actually still give you something very, very impressive. So yeah, I think like 30% in the long run is probably a good place to be. I wouldn't want to be, it's going to go above that in the near term, but I wouldn't bet for being significantly above that in the long run.
Got it.
And maybe margins come down a bit at some point as Tesla expands its scale.
Mm-hmm. On the flip side, I mean, do you ever ponder the hyper bull case of if Tesla does, you know, not just solve full self-driving, but let's say their, you know, package, whether or not robotaxis ever materialize, but let's say their autopilot is so much better than any other competition that it adds a lot of value, and the take rate, let's say, increases as, let's say, it improves in functionality. Let's say even, let's not talk about exactly when they solve it, the full self-driving problem, but wouldn't the take rate increasing, if the competition isn't, let's say, very close to Tesla, increase margins to the point where maybe margins could go a lot higher than 30%? What's your ideas on that?
Yeah. So the sky is almost the limit on that front. And I think you frame it well. So you have one dimension, which is how much value do you add with Autopilot? So today I am like a heavy user of Autopilot. And so I pay 10 grand every time I buy a Tesla. And sometimes I complain a bit about it to get it. And I see the value because I really like to be hands off and to be concentrating on what's happening around me when I drive. And I have an on Tesla and I hate driving it because I can't flip in the autopilot on the highway. So I am a very early adopter. But and I understand well the risk of using it, how you have to be careful about it, and in, as like the safety and the acceptance of the product is increasing, you should have a lot of me's around, and maybe they will not all want to spend 10 grand, but they will probably value the product a lot. So that's one dimension, which is like expanding the market on which the value is unambiguously recognized. And then there is a second dimension, which is nobody gets close to Tesla, which is not like it's not a sold, you know, outcome, because like Mobileye is developing a system that is doing pretty well. And you have like a dozen players trying to nail robotaxi who were working on platform that are doing well as well. But maybe because Tesla is the only one to have enough data, the only one to have the scale of the infrastructure to bring up the data, retrain models with unique computers that they design in-house. So you have a very, very strong case for Tesla doing something that nobody else can really match. And so if you have these two things together, then on the lifetime of a car with an autopilot priced at $200 a month, autopilot quadruples the profit per car. So you make $7,500 of profit on selling the car, and then you make three times that actually getting paid $200 a month without any significant, very limited extra cost. And so even if Tesla reduces the cost by one third, so you're talking like $70 a month for autopilot, which if it's a real autopilot and it feels like too cheap, it's probably going to be more than that. It still doubles the value of your car business. And in addition to that, it's much, much higher quality revenues, because that's revenues in which you have stickiness, in which you have recurrence. It's revenues that are not at risk of being competed away, like the car revenues in the long run will be competed away. And so, yeah, so even if you're being cautious on valuation, autopilot by itself at least doubles the value of Tesla as a car business. And actually, we did some work on the insurance business, and we think insurance cannot maybe not double the profit you make on a car, but it can add at least 50%. So these things can, if you take these things into account, the overall gross margin of the business could largely exceed 30%. Mm-hmm. Now, remember what I told you, the most misunderstood thing is that you don't have to worry about that to look at Tesla for the next 10 years. You actually just concentrate on the auto business, and this auto business that is a 30% gross margin today will probably be still around that, plus maybe a bit less in the long run, and then you have a lot of additional upside around it. And let me, by the way, expand a bit on autopilot with two observations. So the first one, I think like the idea that Tesla can deploy a fleet of robotaxis, it's delusional. It doesn't work like that, okay? It's very, very complicated. And I think the only people who will be able to leverage robotaxis are people who already have a network of ride sharing with humans, in which they're going to be able to introduce robotaxis slowly over time. So I really don't believe in that story at all. And I have actually a very, very strong conviction on that. Mm-hmm. Now, if Tesla really nails autopilot in a way that others can't really replicate, that would mostly be because of what Tesla can do in terms of perception. You know, getting information from the car and perfectly understanding what's around the car. And if Tesla is really the only company nailing that, that business actually is probably going to be worth more than everything else combined at Tesla. Because that means, you know, today everybody's talking about like the metaverse, and everybody is talking about augmented reality. But what's key roadblock for these things to exist is to have absolutely flawless machine perception. That's what Elon calls real world AI, and he's it's very profound. This idea of calling that real world AI is eye opening. So nobody else is doing real world AI. And if they nail that in a way that is not replicable, then actually that's where, as I said, it's probably worth more than all the car-centric businesses of Tesla together, because that's doing robots, that's doing augmented reality, that's doing the metaverse.
Got it. So on that point, let's say hypothetically, Tesla does reach a point where their perception, their real-world AI is unmatchable. It's just in a completely different league. And let's say, you know, it's because of their data, their edge cases that they get, their talent, everything, their full stack. why would robotaxi deployment be delusional at that point? Or do you think it's just, it just needs to be gradual? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, exactly. So first of all, I have doubts, like open-minded and respectuous doubts about nailing perception means you nail driverless, like robotaxi. I know that that's what Elon believes. I think there is an element in driving which, even if you have perfect understanding of your environment, there are things, I don't know if today's AI is very capable of doing that in a way that is satisfactory. So that's one thing. And that's a complete open-ended question. It's like, let's say it's my view against the view of Elon, so I'm not sure. Now there is another element where, to me, it's very easy. It's like, do you remember, let me take like a hyperbolic road to answer your question. Do you remember Google Fiber?
Yes, yes.
So one morning Google said, you know, we did the math. You put a fiber in the ground, you connect a house, it should cost like $20 per month per house. And the fact that AT&T and Verizon charge $100 for that is outrageous. So we're going to start rolling out our own fiber. Look at our unit economics. And people were very excited about that at the time. It could have made actually Google be worth more than what they were at the time by an order of magnitude. And they rolled out in Kansas City, which was like very nice urban environment to try that. And then they realized what real life was. So you have to roll out the fiber, and you realize that road after road, street after street, it's a very painful work. And then once you have a fiber, in order to get to your unit economics, you need people to connect. And you realize that the money you have to spend to go and convince people, stop spending 100, spend 20 with me for a service that will be 10 times better. That actually, it's costed an enormous amount of money to do that. And so after 4 or 5 years of rolling out Kansas City, they say all what we anticipated revealed true. And we have a much better model than AT&T and Verizon. Of course, we had zero legacy, zero sync heavy, inamovable cost or anything like that. But we can't roll out because it would take us like $100 billion and 50 years to roll out in the country. So they stopped it. So now think about robotaxi. So let's imagine Tesla wants to do robotaxi in a city like Boston. So I don't have all, I did that model, but I don't have all the numbers in mind anymore. But so you will need to buy a few thousand cars, maybe 10 or 20,000 cars, and you wouldn't need to get them on the road. But in a city in which Uber and Lyft are already competing against each other fairly fiercely. And so if you want to take market share in that market, you've seen how much it did cost venture capital to propel up a Lyft and an Uber. So you would need to lose an enormous amount of money just to get market share, to become like to be a new entrant in a natural duopoly. Mm-hmm. And then once you get that, you will need to leverage the economics of your robotaxi technology to slowly get out of business like human driver operators in order to take like a monopoly. And then once you have a monopoly, you can increase prices again, and then you can make money. And basically I did that model on Boston, and it was like a $10 billion kind of cash burn before you, assuming you have a good technology, before you can get to break even. And that's where it doesn't make any sense. Why would Tesla go after such a bad return on capital?
Sure.
Because that would be a bad business. That would be possible, but that would be a bad business.
I mean, isn't that whole example, though, dependent on using humans as drivers? Because that's what Uber and Lyft do. If Tesla actually does solve, let's say, full self-driving in a way that's far ahead than anyone else, and they're not using humans, fundamentally, isn't the human labor the biggest percent cost of ride sharing? And if you could get the human out of the picture and let's say you do a mile, your cost is like 10 cents or something, and Uber's cost is, you know, $1.50 or something, $1.50. How can Uber and Lyft compete with cars that have no human labor in it? What's your idea, thoughts?
So that's the same as how could Verizon and AT&T compete against Google Fiber? It would be impossible. But the thing is that Google Fiber doesn't exist. And the cost of creating Google Fiber is so outrageous that it's absolutely not worth it. So yes, once you have an operation run by Tesla, so the rule of thumb is that, you know, if you spend $10 with Uber today, $2.5 go to the Uber platform, makes a profit of the platform, and $7.50 go into the car and the driver. And if you replace the driver by an advanced autonomous system and the infrastructure to run it, etc., you probably more than halve this $7.50. So what costs $5 with Uber, $10 with Uber could cost maybe $5 with Tesla, something like that, once you're at scale. But before you get there, you will have to convince everybody to get into the car. They, like, your clients are not going to be bots, okay? And they're going to be like, over my dead body. It's going to be very, very costly to attract them. And the economics of ride sharing are such that if you're below critical mass relative to the leader in your market, you can't compete because you don't have cars. Or if you want to have cars, you have to lose even more money, like a taxi business, okay? So the best taxi business is to have your own driver, but that makes the cost per ride fairly expensive. Sure. And a bad taxi business is when you wait half an hour, whatever, a minimum, whenever you need a taxi, because taxis are always busy. And so you to compensate for these economics of ramping up the infrastructure and ramping up your network so that you can compete, that's where the problem is. But I agree with you that once you have your network, of course you compete away.
I mean,
human drivers.
Yeah, I mean, it would seem the fundamental issue with robotaxi is actually the quality and safety of the robotaxi, meaning if it's like, you know, not that much safer and people have hesitation with it, then I could understand, you know, it could be difficult to get that network. But if, you know, there is exponential improvements hypothetically where it improves very fast at the pace of AI, and it reaches a point where it just isn't a competition anymore. Like the AI car is so much safer than a human. In that case, it just seems like it becomes like almost a no-brainer, because it becomes mostly a cost and availability issue. Like, is the car available at this point, and how much does it cost? And if it gets to a point where it's like, you know, less than half of the cost, right, of an Uber, but it's like, you know, five times safer than Uber, and it's available quicker. I don't know, how can Uber, I mean, Uber can compete if there's a competitor, right? If there's Mobileye or some other technology, but if there isn't a competitor that's in the same kind of, you know, level of Tesla, then isn't, I don't know, it just seems like it would be like Nokia competing with the iPhone. It doesn't seem to have any match. Or Google search, you know, competing with Yahoo. Like, I understand the whole like Google Fiber idea, but the problem with the Google Fiber issue is there's not much strong data or network effects with fiber per se, because a lot of it is infrastructure costs, it's labor costs, it's the laying of the fiber. But with autonomous, let's say, rideshare play, I would say most of it is the actual, you know, quality and safety of the ride, which is dependent on, let's say, the quality of the data neural nets. And once you get that, it just is a flywheel of network effects that I don't know how you could stop that. But anyways, yeah, I'm curious to hear, you know, your ideas here.
So you're kind of like doing prospective analysis, but you're jumping to an end state and actually, if you unroll, you know, the scenario where that end state exists, you'll see that on the way there, things will probably play out differently. So let's imagine, because I don't believe in like sorting out driverless is not about tuning and training your neural network. It's a much, much broader complex problem, because you have elements of like there isn't only safety, there is also, mission delivery, like being able to complete your ride and to do something that makes your, this ability of an Uber driver to figure out a solution to a problem it's a very rich, very complex operational problem. So let's imagine tomorrow Tesla has like a perfect driverless technology, then what Tesla is going to do is not try and prove the statements of Elon of 5 years ago right. They're going to try and make money. So if you have a fantastic self-driver product today, so I have my personal idea of who is the closest to self-driving today in terms of technology. It's not Tesla. And these guys are very advanced in their conversation with trucking, like transport companies and with ride-sharing networks and things like that. So imagine you have like an autonomous driver ready for a truck. You go to like a logistics company and you have a conversation with them. In your opinion, how much can you charge for your driver, your like cyborg driver? You basically can charge the salary of a truck driver, because we don't have enough truck drivers in this country, and we are not going to have enough ever again. So you can start doing trucking if you want, but you would be a moron. It's much, much higher value to just sell your driver to trucking companies. Okay? So now, in a conversation with an Uber driver, with like an Uber, this same company is talking about pricing and things like that. And here is how the conversation goes. It's like, well, I am Uber. So I have everything. I have 90% of the problem, or let's say 60% of the problem, and the 40% left today is my driver, and tomorrow could be yours. And as a matter of fact, today I don't have enough drivers, so I would put a small premium on being able to have more drivers whenever I want, that I can just send like a text and the guy will obey instantly. But it's not game changing as it is for trucking. What I really like about your driver is that it can reduce the cost. And if that reduces the cost, I would still make the same profit. But the hold, I would pass on to the client the cost reduction. And it would basically double my volumes, or triple or quadruple my volumes, because ride sharing is very elastic. The cheaper it gets, the more people use it. Mm-hmm. And so the kind of deals they're structuring is about, let's get together the cost of ride sharing halved. And you keep being the ride-sharing operator, and I am like the technology provider making half the salary of a human driver. And I'm like, it's awesome. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's a beautiful shit. And you're like, of course Tesla would do that. Mm-hmm. Because the idea that is stupid is this idea that you are going to go and take the uphill battle of trying to take Uber and Lyft out, which is a nonsense. Mm-hmm. So...
okay.
Tesla could make a lot of money out of that technology, but not by doing their own robotaxi.
Got it. So you think eventually they will, provide that technology to existing platforms like Uber or Lyft?
They could, yes, they could. Mm-hmm. Now, yeah, they could, exactly. So in this scenario where they do things nobody can nail elsewhere, etc., that's what they would do.
Yeah, okay.
My thesis is different. I think driverless is a problem that is different from autopilot, from full self-driving. And I think Tesla is going to do exceptionally well at driving assistance. So that's your car, you're sitting behind the wheel, and the car is like autonomous, the same way, a boat on autopilot is autonomous, but you still have to be here to watch over it. The gap between that technology and the technology of having a vehicle that can deliver a mission without a human intervening, mm-hmm. and being supervised by an infrastructure that makes the thing safe and reliable is a different job. And so by the time Tesla nails autopilot out of the group of Aurora, Waymo, Cruise, and others, mm-hmm. Some of these guys will nail driverless. So that's going to be different markets.
So, do you think... what's the company you think is ahead of Tesla? Is it Aurora?
I wouldn't say ahead of Tesla. They are completely in the league of Tesla, there is nobody else. Okay. They are by themselves. Okay. Mm-hmm. There is the intriguing Mobileye, mm-hmm. who is basically putting together things that are very similar. They're similarly. So Mobileye means maybe Tesla will have the best autopilot, but all cars will have autopilots. And then there is another league, which is Waymo, Aurora, Cruise, and others. And within that group, I think technology is almost secondary. What really matters is your approach to business development and to how you get into into the market. Mm-hmm. And from that perspective, by far the guys who are the smartest and who really get it are Aurora.
Interesting.
Because what is Waymo doing? They're trying to do their own Uber. So yeah. It's like very, very painful.
Yeah, yeah. Aurora, they're good at, they make a lot of partnerships for sure. And they do have a lot of smart people. I would love to dive in, have a longer conversation with FSD, autonomous. This is a huge area. But I know for the sake of time, I have some other pressing questions I want to ask you before we wrap up. Do you think Tesla can become the most valuable company in the world at some point? And if so, what's your personal kind of opinion? What year that might happen?
Yeah, so I think it will be the most valuable company in the world. It's very likely. Yeah, I don't see who could compete. Yeah, you would need to have like a very significant disruption from where we stand today to get someone else being worth more than Tesla. And what time horizon? So let me. Let me have a quick look at my numbers. But I think, you know. Yeah. I think that other very large caps are doing very well as well. So, but yeah, it could be 2025. It's a bit stretched, but it could be 2025. Mm-hmm. In the second half of the decade, but the first half of the second half, probably. Mm-hmm.
Got it. Yeah, I noticed in one of your ratings, you have a sell on Apple. So you're not very bullish, I'm guessing, on Apple, or what's your ideas with that?
Yeah, so Apple as overall as a company, looking at it on a long time horizon, like we've been talking about Tesla, I think it's a great company. It's a great stock. It's probably the big difference is that it's not a startup. It's a $3 trillion, very 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 mature franchise. Okay, so the kind of growth outlook you have. I feel confident Tesla can grow volumes 50% a year for multiple years. I would feel confident Apple can grow volumes 5% a year for multiple years. So it's like an order of magnitude less growth, okay? So that puts Apple in a different league, but still a very high quality investment. So I am not like, I happen to have had like sell ratings or neutral ratings on Apple quite a lot. And I've not been of good advice on these ones, by the way. But I'm not negative on Apple, no.
Got it. Okay.
The reason why I have a sell rating on Apple right now and since the beginning of last summer is simply because Apple has about 1 billion iPhone users. And of these iPhone users, half of them never use like a first-hand iPhone. They get a phone from their parents or like a refurbished iPhone, etc. Mm-hmm. So the people who actually buy a new phone, it's 500 million. So when you have like a very good phone that sells 240 million units, it's scooping up in 1 year almost half the market. Mm-hmm. So if the next phone is not very innovative, not very exciting, it's going to be very, very challenging for that next one to do as well as the previous one. Mm-hmm. And so we expect the iPhone 13 to do terrible. Mm-hmm. And we expect the stock to react to that. Mm-hmm. And now, in terms of technicalities, when we did that, Apple was trading at $130. And so at the time we said, We think like historically the pullback would be 35%, so our target would be $90. Now the stock worked the way you know it worked, and so our target feels almost like crazy. It's just remember that the target that we set, you know, 8 months ago, and we don't feel the need to like update our target prices.
Yeah.
Like, the story is that we think that you know, in a few weeks, Apple will come out and say, "Well, the iPhone 13, it's slow, etc., etc." And we think the stock is going to react negatively on that one, and nothing else.
Got it. For Tesla, do you have any estimates or expectations on 2022 deliveries? And did the Q4 delivery numbers surprise you? Did you have to adjust your 2022 numbers as a result?
We were not expecting Q4 to be as good, simply because we know that at Tesla today, life is tough. You know, getting these cars out, finding the chips, like sorting out like the supply, it's like a fight of every morning. Like people working in these teams are fighting like the hell to get enough supply to keep going with cars. So that creates a world in which you have actually 1 month's visibility. And so that's what could, you know, hurt Tesla in the near term. And so I thought that in that context, you know, we were expecting like 10%, almost 10, like 5-10% less deliveries. So we were very positively surprised. And what's really frustrating is that it means these guys are awesome. Like what they are doing, you know, to figure out how to work around situations where they don't have the chips and how they help their suppliers. Because very often that's their supplier saying, "Oh, I can't give you that module because I don't have the chip." And then the chip people at Tesla jump on it and say, "Well, you can use this chip instead, or you can buy it there." And so they are like very, very active. But the fact that they do exceptionally well in Q4 doesn't mean that in Q1 they're not going to face, you know, a shortage here and here that is going to slow the momentum. Now, the good thing is that the situation is now going to improve. So maybe Q1 is a trough in terms of scarcity of supply. So things are going to come back. So worst case, you know, you have a bit of a slowdown because of shortages. And then after that, Berlin is going to be ramping, Austin is going to be ramping. And you've seen how much they can squeeze out of existing manufacturing sites. It's insane. They go like, you know, they go beyond all the limits I had in mind. I didn't believe they could do, you know, that many cars out of these two sites. So that's exceptional. And then I think the 4680 program is, I mean, it's still uncertain because it is what it is. You know, it's very innovative and very, very ambitious in terms of timeline. But it's on track. It's delivering, and we will have this year most likely 4680 batteries coming out of the system. So it's going to help Tesla unlock even more, you know, their manufacturing potential. So, you know, like our kind of forecast on 2022. We are at like 1.5 million units. We are probably not going to, we don't have reason to increase that number today, but we are very confident that if we get over that supply constraint over the next 3 to maximum 6 months unhurt, Tesla will do better than that, better than 1.5 million, yes.
Yeah, got it, awesome. Pierre, it's been a fantastic opportunity to talk with you and get to know you, and thank you for generously sharing your thoughts to everyone here. I'll go ahead and link to your Twitter profile in the video description. Is there any other places that people can follow your work?
No, that's mostly Twitter. I try to get on what's the name of the, is that like the getter or whatever?
Yeah.
But I didn't figure out how to link it to Twitter. So for the moment, you'll have to bear with Twitter.
No problem.
So that works well, yes.
Okay, great. Yeah, I look forward to future, maybe a possible opportunity to discuss a lot more topics. But yeah, thanks.
Of course, Dave. That was a pleasure. Enjoy the rest of the day.
All right, you too. We'll see you. Bye.
Bye.